6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we review a bunch of comics and startle Pete right here at the top of the show.
Well, you know, you come in hot, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you look legitimately scared today, though, I gotta say.
Hey, like, well, I was.
Normally, I see you jump back in like a funny way, but this was like, ugh! Like somebody walked over your grave.
Oh, God, don't say that.
Yeah. What? You wouldn't know you're in your grave. It doesn't matter. I don't get that expression. Anyway, what I do get is comic books, and we're going to kick it off talking about Ultimate Spider-Man, number 16 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Marco Cecchetto. As usual, we'll put a blanket spoiler warning over this whole show, because some big things go down in this issue.
Oh, we be talking about it.
Yeah, it's impossible to even talk about this without, you can't explain the concept of this issue without spoiling it. We go back in time and find out what Gwen Stacy has been up to all this time, leading to some huge revelations, because it turns out she's been the man behind the curtain pretty much the entire time. The whole time manipulating things.
She's been here the whole time.
And I gotta say, as usual with this book, it totally works, totally tracks, totally makes sense, but it is another crazy, wild swing that I absolutely did not see coming, and I loved it.
Yeah, this was great. This was such a fun, cool issue. The twists and turns and the mysterious reveals. This was just, and the art is just fantastic. What was great is it was really about Spider-Man, and I had a blast. So this was fantastic.
Well, I think that's been true of most of the book, right? Like, very rarely has Peter Parker taken center stage. It's mostly focusing on the people around him. This issue definitely more so than the others, leading to a great revelation that completely recontextualizes something, a terrible thing that happened several issues back. But that's one of the surprising strengths of the book. You know, we talked about this before, how fans are like, it's working because Peter Parker is married to Mary Jane. And that's not why. It's
that's
because,
a great impression of me, by the way.
Thank you. You really got to stop posting under all those sock puppet accounts, I got to be honest. And please leave Tom Brevoort alone. He doesn't have anything to do with this. Anyway, it's good because Mary Jane has interesting stuff going on in her life. It's good because Gwen Stacy has this whole thing going on. Harry Osborn is a fantastic character. J. Jonah Jameson and Ben Parker, their newspaper is fascinating as well. Even the kids are really interesting. It's the best ensemble cast we've seen in a really, really long time in a Spider-Man book, where usually it revolves around him, but you usually see, because of the soap opera, it'll cut to other people in his life, and we haven't been really getting that too much in the mainstream book. I'm hopeful we'll get more of that with Joe Kelly, but I guess we'll see.
We'll see, yeah.
Anyway, great book. Next up, The Power Company Recharged, number one from DC Comics, written by Brian Edward Hill, art by Carrie Randolph, Aletha Martinez, Norm Rapmund, Ray Anthony Height, and Studio Sky Tiger. This is following up on a couple of issues, including the Black Lightning run, and also I'm totally blanking on the name of the issue, but there was a previous, I think it was the Black History Month special, DC Power. There we go, where they introduced this idea that Josiah Power wants to bring back the Power Company. And here we're getting that in full force as Batman Jace Fox investigates a mystery alongside them. What'd you think about this, Pete?
Well, this is just awesome. Love the art. Love the story. Great action. You know, we've got the classic kind of Batman stories like, I work better alone, but, you know, sometimes I'll be on a team and help you guys out. But, okay, I'm out of here. Bye. You know, so I thought that was kind of cool. I just get so excited when I see Aletha Martinez on a project because, one, she is amazing at her job, but, two, she is just such a nice person. So it always makes me happy.
I totally agree with that part about making people happy, and it's a good team, and I'd love to see more come out of this. I do think the way that they rolled out the Batman stuff was weird in this book to me, just based on the path that you're talking about. Like, maybe this was a working against expectation things, but you get Batman in a situation where he's like, I don't work with other people, I work alone. And by the end of the book, he's like, and I do work alone and I don't like other people. And it's like, what? Wait, no, hold on. You're supposed to learn that the rest of the team is there as well. And the rest of the team by the end of the book is like, well, I guess we did nothing.
We didn't move him at all.
Yep. Didn't change his mind. Also, he took care of the whole problem and thanks.
So, well, I mean, that's kind of how Batman works. You know I mean, that's why Lego Batman is so great. Works.
That's not a dramatic arc. That's not him being like, all right, begrudgingly.
Well, it's one issue. How much do you want him to change in one issue?
No, he doesn't. A lot more. I want to see him change more than he did. That's all. I don't know, because I like these characters. I think it's a fun mix.
Great.
Black Lightning and Vixen and Signal and Josiah Power, but like to Batman's point, Batman calls all of them out and is like, Josiah Power, you're just turning this into a company named after yourself. And he's like, I am, and all I'm going to do is stand here in the background the entire time. It's like, I don't know. I wish if you're going to do a team book, bringing back the Power Company, make it a team book. That's all. Not how Batman is cooler than anybody else.
It's one issue, man.
It's one issue, but it's just this special. That's it. There are no more issues currently.
Or maybe this issue does so good that there will be more issues.
I hope so, but I guess we'll see. And if there are further issues, I believe Batman will continue not to learn his lesson.
Oh, I don't know, man.
You think Batman's going to finally learn his lesson?
He's finally going to be like, all right, you're right. You're right, Powered Company. Let's do this.
And then that's the last issue. Godzilla versus America, Godzilla versus Los Angeles, number one from IDW, written by Gabriel Hardman, Dave Baker, Jordan Morris, and Jay Gonzo. Art by Gabriel Hardman, Dave Baker, Nicole Gao, and Jay Gonzo. This is the second issue in the Godzilla versus America series of one-shots, where you get local creators taking on stories of the giant kaiju. This one, on the surface, should seem like it's poorly timed, given the L.A. fires, but laudably, IDW is donating proceeds from this book to BINC, the foundation that supports bookshops and comic book shops that have been impacted by the L.A. fires. So that's pretty cool. The other part that I throw out there that's really cool about this is, even though it is Godzilla destroying Los Angeles, other than the first story, which deals with it on a very ground level and visceral way, they're all very fun and are very, like, big ups to Los Angeles stories, which, so it's very, heartening is the right word, but that's, it left me with a good feeling at the
end. It's got positive vibes,
Yeah, positive vibes, exactly. What'd you think, Pete? Which stories did you like it here?
This is just awesome. What's great about supporting this book is you're, you know, also supporting people who need help right now, so it's a win-win situation, but Also, what I love right now is Godzilla has never been in more comic books. We're in a Godzilla boom right now, and it is just awesome. There's never been more Godzilla comics coming out. Godzilla is so popular in comic books right now, and as a Godzilla fan, I am loving it. It's well, almost here,
can I just say I will agree point. With you on there have never been more Godzilla comics coming out. I don't know that he has never been more popular, but there are a lot of comics coming out, and there are even more comics coming out as we go. Is there a point, and I know I'm asking the wrong person, when there is too much Godzilla?
There might be. But we have not reached it, my friend. We have not reached it. Right now, okay. It's at that beautiful part where it's just, you just can't believe your luck.
It's like a Godzilla bath, would you say?
Yeah, it's a Godzilla bath. Yeah, I mean, this is just really, really cool. I loved all the different kind of art and stories. First story, you know, the kind of style was really cool with all these kind of like... the different images and kind of textures that they use. So really impressive. And then they kind of like, there was a tonal one that was almost like a newspaper thing that was really cool. So just a lot of great stuff.
I'll give a shout out to our buddy Jordan Morris's story set in the not Universal theme park, but close enough, I thought was a lot of fun. Just having Godzilla attack that and having a heroic tour guide on the Universal Studios tour.
Yeah, yeah, who gets
Universal, but
gets the job at the end there. That was pretty cool.
Very fun story. And I also loved the one
art in that. Is just
that
sick.
Was great too. I love the one in the LA subway because that's a thing that like, everybody knows is a so maligned part of LA that exists. And people are like, I've taken the subway a couple of times because I come from New York and I'm like, sure, subway. And every person I've ever talked to is like, what? What did you do? So having a thing where they're trying to figure out the LA subway to escape Godzilla, I thought was a really fun bit. And the art in that one, like you were saying, was just like so complex and interesting and full of facts about the subway. Very fun. Yeah.
But it's also kind of fun because it justifies the fact that regardless of how well it works or good it is or whatever, it saves the day. You know what I mean? They're able to hide out under there. So, you know.
There you go. All right. Moving on to Lost Fantasy, number one from Image Comics, written by Kurt Pyers, art by Luca Casalanguida. This is a new anthology series, I assume, by this team, where the front story is about a dude with a giant sword hunting monsters. The backstory is a continuation of I am blanking on the story about the powered people who now live on Mars and... What is it called, Pete? I'll look it up.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, anyway, it was a continuation of a previous Kurt Pyers book.
You're talking about Katy Perry going to space?
Going to Mars. She's going to Mars now. That's cool.
Yeah, she's going to Mars next.
I'll look it up. You talk about the book and say what you like about it.
So first off, if our live show didn't get cut off, we would have talked about what we were looking forward to this week. And this is one of my ones. I love this cover. I love this comic. This is an interesting, to me, it felt like it was a cross between like Killing the Children and Hellboy. So I felt like this, the art style was just so cool. And just kind of the characters were so interesting. That kind of like concrete character kind of reminded me a little bit of Hellboy. But yeah, I love the action, the twists and turns. But really, the art is just such a blast. And it has such a cool kind of vibe and feel to it. And it really delivers. You kind of see the kind of main character with the giant sword. And we get to kind of live a little bit in his head and see how things work. So very cool. Strong start. Very excited about kind of getting into this more because this is awesome.
Indigo Children is the name of the other comic that is continued in the back. That was a nice surprise to me, particularly after the first story. I also really liked the first story, and I was surprised how straight anime character it went. Like you said, I was sort of expecting something is killing the children based on the very cool first couple of pages. It leads very heavy magic. But as it goes... He has that like classic Final Fantasy hair going on.
He
pulls out the Final Fantasy sword. I was like, all right, let's go. Let's do this.
All right. Yeah.
And Kurt Pyers is always like very focused on the pitch. Like he comes up with these clean pitches. Sometimes he can get very heady in an interesting way. This is, I think, like as base action as you can go. So it's an interesting mode to see him play in versus the Indigo Children storyline in the back, which is very arch and is very complicated. But great stuff. Great art. Definitely pick this up.
Great package.
Great package. Thunderbolts Doomstrike, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, art by Tommaso Bianchi. In this issue, per the cover, the new Thunderbolts, run by Bucky, are going up against the original Thunderbolts at the behest of Doom. And things don't go that well. I know Justin has been the big fan of this one on the podcast, but what did you think, Pete?
Yeah, I just thought this was a great setup, right? Old Thunderbolts versus new Thunderbolts. Let's go, right? Fun idea. I think this is really well executed here. And then, you know, spoilers, but dinner, you know, the winner gets dinner with Doom. So, I mean, that's just fun all around, you know? So,
would you take that? Would you take dinner with Doom?
I probably wouldn't. You know what I mean? But if it was like, you know, dinner with Doom or dinner with Thanos, I got to go with Doom. Mm-hmm. But I just think that this was such a fun idea and so well executed. Great art and action.
If you could have dinner with three Marvel supervillains, who would you choose? Ooh. And by the way, my follow-up question is going to be Nightmare Blunt Rotation, so think about that as well.
Oh, man, this is really taking a turn. Well, here's the thing. The problem with villains is it's like which villain, you know, wouldn't kill you and would maybe enjoy the dinner. You know what I mean? Because it's like, hey, you know, maybe you could have Grundy over and be like, Grundy, listen, before you go, we're just going to have a nice meal, all right? So you don't have to hurt anybody. Let's just kind of sit down and enjoy the time we have together. Maybe he would be like, oh, that would be great. You know?
Solomon Grundy dines on a Monday. That's also a DC character, and I asked Marvel, but all right.
Oh, okay. All right, guy. Sorry.
First thought that came to mind was Dr. Octopus, just because I feel like as long as you tread in carefully.
Trays around?
Yeah, he'd pass trays around for sure. That's my first consideration with a dinner mate. No, but I feel like he'd probably like prolifically talk about any topic and he'd be like, I'm invited to dinner. I'm the star of the dinner and start talking a lot. And as long as you didn't piss him off too bad, I think it would go okay. He probably wouldn't kill you. He'd probably just be like,
yeah, but him's long-winded conversations would make you want to, you know, kill yourself. It would be a horrible
I could just concentrate on eating and relax.
Oh,
my just
God.
Relax.
That guy drives me crazy.
Who else? Probably none of the rest of the Sinister Six. I feel Kraven would bring some fucked-up meat.
Silver Surfer would be great because he probably wouldn't eat anything.
Do you consider him a villain?
Yeah, I mean, once you see him, then you're going to be dead in a matter of days or minutes.
Okay, so you're like classic Silver Surfer, like first appearance Silver Surfer.
Yeah, because if he shows up, then your whole world's going to get eaten. You know what I mean? So you can like him, but he's still kind of a villain.
Yeah. I'd also say like Carnage, because I don't love dinner and it would be over quick that way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be fun to have kind of like Lady Death and we could talk about what a fucking psycho Thanos is. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And she would be like, oh, my God, this guy just stalks me. It's fucking weird.
Yeah. And she'd be like, this is crazy. Pete, you going to eat that olive? You should eat that olive.
I'd be like, oh, I'll fall for that.
Anyway, just to get back to this book, this series is really good. This is very dark, but this is exactly what I want out of a Thunderbolts book. It's a great Songbird issue as well.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're a Thunderbolts fan, there's some really rough and emotional things that happened here that really made me miss some of the other Thunderbolts runs, which have been very good. So, great stuff. Batman Superman World's Finest 2025 Annual Number 1 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid and Christopher Cantwell and Morgan Hampton, art by Dan McDade and Clayton Henry. Let's continue with the We Are Yesterday crossover. And this issue, Gorilla Grodd talks to the Legion of Doom about what his plan is, and they start to put it into action. We're halfway through this crossover. How are you feeling about it, Pete?
I'm having a good time. I love Gorilla Grodd. I think this is just a cool, great, big, enjoyable story. Love the art and the different kind of tales we get in this one. I also love the Jon Stewart story in this. So
I thought Morgan Henton's John Stewart story with Clayton Henry was really good, going through his whole history and setting it up.
Yeah.
I got to say, as much as I like Mark Waid, I don't know what's going on in this crossover right now. Like, we talked about with the first two issues. The first issue was Gorilla Grodd from our time, I guess, being taken over by Gorilla Grodd from the future. And the end was like, here we go. The We Are Yesterday crossover starts now. And I was like, okay, cool. Bring it on. And then the second issue is like, here's how Gorilla Grodd came back in time. And now begins the We Are Yesterday crossover. I was like, okay. And now we're at the third chapter. And Grodd's like, my plan is to go forward in time to conquer back in time. And I don't know what that means. I don't know what he's talking
about.
That's
the classic Samurai Jack Aku situation where Aku throws Samurai Jack back in time, and so it gives him time to create a future where he is the winner. You know what I mean?
That doesn't make any sense, though.
Well, that's a classic setup for a villain story, though.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's too late.
It doesn't give you time. It gives you less time.
Well, it's too late.
It gives you less time. If you're in the future and they're in the past, they have more time to plan.
Nope.
I don't understand this. I don't understand what's happening here. I really wish I did, but I don't know. I just wanted some classic Legion of Doom shenanigans, and it's just like...
But it is there. It's Grodd kind of giving out jobs.
This feels like Lucy with the football every issue. but even worse, it's like every time Charlie Brown goes to catch the football, Lucy is like 10 feet ahead of him, and he's like, how did you get over there? Oh, well, I guess I'll walk up to you. And she's like, see you next issue.
But oh, boy.
Anyway. We'll see. I'll keep reading it, I guess.
I'm having a good time.
I don't like having good times. I like having dinner with carnage. Giant Size Wacky Races, number one from Dynamite, written by Ivan Cohen, art by Mariano Benitez Chapo. We had Ivan Cohen on the show a couple of weeks back to talk about this book, so check that out. Pete? Yes? What? Anything you wanted to say?
You're too fast with it.
I know. I've gotten faster. Anyway, this is a reboot of the classic Giant Size, classic Wacky Races cartoon show for a modern era. We talked about this a little bit on the live show, but what did you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, this is just a great nostalgia bath, good time. You know what I mean? Like, I love the cartoons back in the day with the Wacky Races, and this we're kind of leaning into Penelope Pit Stop, but you get all the great characters, you got Dick Dastardly, you know, you got Muttley, you know what I mean? That's my dog, you know? So this is just great times. Awesome art. You know, this is a blast.
I really like this as well. I don't know as much about Wacky Races other than, like I said on the show, when you say Dick Dastardly and Muttley, I'm like, oh yeah, those guys. Where do I know them from? Could not begin to tell you. But obviously, I've taken that in some way in terms of culture. And I think this team does a good job of reinventing it for a new generation, giving it a little bit of seriousness, but not too much seriousness. It feels like the sort of thing that I'm surprised they only put up a one shot of it, because it feels like a good setup for an ongoing series. But I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of ongoing series, Snot Girl number 20 from Image Comics, written by Brian Lee O'Malley, art by Leslie Hung. We are finishing off the Weekend 2 storyline as Snotty finally settles her relationship with her girlfriend. And meanwhile, the rest of the cast is tracking down a weird cult that likes to play color games. That's definitely the weirder part of the book. But the reason I said ongoing series in such a way is they reveal at the end of the issue that this is the last issue of this book, but not the end of the Snot Girl series. They are very open about the fact that these have not been selling and they haven't been making money on them, but they have been making money on the collected volumes. So they're going to continue this as a probably yearly volume graphic novel series rather than a single issue series, which I think might be better for the book, actually. Maybe it'll fit more. So I'm excited to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what works, you should lean into it. You know what I mean? If that's where that's what the people want, then, then give it to them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And the art is great on this.
Yes. Story, Pete? Any thoughts?
You love this shit. You know what I mean?
I do not. I've been very back and forth on this title, and I think we have leaned into weirdness, but the snot girl side of the story is very fun. There's just a ghost that's hanging out with them and chatting. There's some goofy romantic shenanigans. And it seems like they're going to lead into more of that in the next volume. So that part I'm excited to see. I'm not quite sure what's going on in the cult storyline, though there are some good jokes in that part as well. So we'll see. Godzilla vs. Spider-Man, number one from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Nick Bradshaw. This is continuing the series of one-shots pitting Marvel characters against the giant monster. And this one takes back to the 80s. We get Spider-Man not just stuck. He's recently gotten his black suit. He doesn't know much about it. Godzilla shows up. He's also stuck between Mary Jane and the Black Cat. And I'll tell you what, I was a little down on the last one because I think it didn't quite nail the 70s style that Ryan North did with the Fantastic Four one for the 60s. But this one crushes it with the 80s. Like Joe Kelly captures it perfectly in a very, very fun way. This is so far my favorite of the three one-shots.
Yeah, agreed. This is a ton of fun. And, you know, spoilers, but Venom Godzilla is a blast. And, yeah, I just, they did such a great job of setting this up and then executing it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, there was a little rough, you know, what happens for poor Peter here at the end where neither one of them are into him. But I still think it was it's a fun ride and definitely worth checking out for sure.
But he's trying to ape the 80s comics where that was that constant back and forth between the Black Cat and Mary Jane. He's always getting into romantic scrapes. He always has to be in too many places at once. The narration is right. The tone is right. Of course, it's regressive in terms of how they're treating the female characters, but they are trying to make it like a lost 80s comic. So your mileage may vary there, but I think in terms of the goal, they hit that the right way. The Question, great. All Along the Watchtower, number six from DC Comics, written by Alex Segura, art by
Who we had on the show, and we talked about this book with him.
Not much, though. Not much. We actually talked about other books a bunch more, but this is the final issue of the Question series as the Question and her team take on the cyborg Superman on the Justice League Watchtower. How'd you feel about the conclusion of this book, Pete?
Well, I feel bad. I cut you off when you were talking because I was trying to do a bit. So could you repeat who the art was? We heard you say Alex Segura wrote it, but I think we cut off the artist, so I don't want to do that.
I think it's okay. No, I'm kidding. Art by Cien Torme.
Thank you. Jeez.
Yes.
I love this because this issue we get to kind of see, you know, spoilers, but the Question just whooping ass here. And I needed this. And also it was nice to see.
Did you need this?
Because, you know, it was nice to see the Question finally kind of doing the things that I believe the Question can. And it was nice to see the Question kind of whooping ass. And then also she was like, also, I need my dog. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Into dogs this episode, Pete.
Well, I also thought it was cool, you know, the ending where it was kind of like, I'm ready for anything, let's go. So kind of got you fired up at the end with the badass kind of team last panel. Great art.
Yeah. This is another book like the Challengers book that I guess, well, I think this one was planned as a mini series. I don't know about the Challengers one, but it ends with the Question's adventures will continue throughout the DC universe. And it's like, oh, I'd like to see them continue with this book that I was reading.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe, but
I don't know.
I hope the Question gets put on more projects like this because this is a great kind of like way to do it where Question's solving something. And, you know, I think it's great.
Radiant Black, number 33 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Eduardo Ferragato. In this issue, Radiant Black takes a little side trip from dealing with the fallout of the Catalyst War, though that's still bubbling in the background, to fight a vampire werewolf that is terrorizing the town.
Oh, yeah.
And we get a bit of a crossover, a surprise crossover with Rogue's son, which makes a lot of sense here. I continue to really enjoy this series. It has a classic superhero tone with the right amount of humor throughout here. There's also some really interesting emotional stuff that goes on with Marshall's secret identity in terms of his mother not liking Radiant Black. And I don't know. I'm always a sucker for that when somebody close to the hero is like, well, I love you, normal person, but I hate that hero. Like how Aunt May was always talking about that terrible Spider-Man. Yeah. It's good. It gives you a lot of dramatic tension.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because we've been saying so many amazing things about Radium Black over the years. So it's like, man, trying to come up with new things to say about something that continues to be amazing and is really impressive artistically and writing-wise and story and stuff like that. But, man, we got some fun cameos in here, and great to see Rogue's son and all that kind of stuff. Love the action. Continue to love the story. This continues to be fantastic. 4 years.
4 years. Four more years. Who are the Power Pals, number two, from Dark Horse Comics? I know. Written by Dwayne Murray, art by Ahmed Rafat. This is becoming a bit of a theme here, but we had Dwayne Murray on the podcast a couple of weeks back to talk about this book, so listen to that. This is about two former child stars who never really made it on a superhero series and years later are hoping to get that fame back by dressing in their own costumes and fighting crime for real. I thought this issue was even better than the first one, and a lot of that is up to the story being a lot of fun, but like we talked about on the show, Ahmed Rafat's layouts in here are wild. There's a whole series of pages that are widescreen lengthwise, so you have to turn the book, and I'm a complete sucker for that. They look really good. It changes up the feel and the format, and I think it works because it makes you concentrate on the book more. It's not just idle flipping. Yeah, you have to think about like, ooh, what's going on here? And it locks
focuses
you in.
Focuses you. Yeah. You got to be present while you're reading it, which is a great idea. Well executed. Yeah, this to me has like a Three Amigos vibe when I read it. Just fun and silly and hilarious, but these kind of people who are trying to be earnest. And I really, really love this art style. And we've talked about how great this is before. And I got high hope for this. And so far, they're really delivering.
DC High Volume Batman. The Dark Knight's definitive DC comic stories. Adapted directly for audio for the very first time.
Fear. I have to make them afraid.
He's got a motorcycle. Get after him or I'll have you shot.
You mean blow up the building?
From this moment on, none of you are safe.
New episodes every Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Wolverine and Kitty Pryde, number one from Marvel, written by Chris Claremont, art by Damian Cusero. This is following up on the classic Kitty Pryde and Wolverine miniseries, which found Kitty Pryde being kidnapped and taken to Japan and turned into a deadly ninja. That is one of the most iconic miniseries of all time. And Chris Claremont has been following up on his classic tales in different aspects. Pete, you're given a devil horns here, so I'm guessing you enjoyed this?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you say Wolverine and then say Japan, I'm like, I'm in. Mm-hmm. You don't even need the rest of that sentence. So, yeah, this is just awesome. Kind of, you know, first off, fun cover that we have here. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's great to kind of have Chris Claremont kind of go back through and kind of do this. This is great. This is a victory lap that's well-deserved. And, I just feel like this is cool. And you got Kitty Pryde kind of being a teen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe she's kind of, you know, got a lot of feelings going on. But, yeah, I just you got the kind of bad guys grabbing kids, classic scenario kind of thing. So, yeah, this is cool package, great art. Yeah, and I'm here for it.
I have nothing against the art, but I thought it was all right. I wish with these sort of things we would get something, if you're going to go for that nostalgia bath, to borrow your term, that was closer to the original. I'm forgetting. I think it was John Byrne on the original series.
Of a John Connor Byrne style?
No, not at all. Because
the cover makes it seem like it is.
The cover looks like it's by Alan Davis. I could be wrong about that. And I would love to see Alan Davis on this. Like, I don't know. Obviously, there is a difference in terms of a older writer and an older artist in terms of potentially what you can tackle in a 20-page issue. This is nothing against anybody. This is just the ravages of time we all deal with. But if you're going to do a sequel to a classic miniseries, I wanted to elicit that same feeling, and I didn't quite get that from the art.
Well, it's also a different take on it, so, you know.
I hear you. Can I ask another question? How do you feel about the fact, which I had forgotten about until I read this, that the way Chris Claremont writes Wolverine, he calls Mariko, Mariko with an apostrophe, which seems like a nickname until you realize it's the exact same number of characters as her regular name.
I don't understand where the question is. So you're saying, okay, do I want Mariko to have an apostrophe or not?
Well, I'm saying is, like, how do you feel about that? Because it's Mariko is her name. Mm-hmm. And the way that Chris Claremont writes Wolverine saying it is like an affectionate nickname, which I, as a kid, was like, he's being very affectionate to her. Reading this, I was like, hold up. Mariko, that's the same amount of effort as saying Mariko. It's basically the same word. It's no different.
He's shortening a little bit.
He's definitely not. It's the same amount of time. Say them. Say them both, and I'll guess which one is which.
Oh, my God. What is happening right now? Dude, so your grammar is the problem that you're having with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
If you're going to switch around the names, Wolverine and Kitty Pryde versus Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, you're going to focus on the grammar. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. Speaking of weird grabber in a title, Batman The Long Halloween, The Last Halloween, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Dave Johnson. In this issue, Batman is continuing to investigate the mystery of even more holiday killings in the, I was about to say, town of Gotham. You guys have heard of that, right? Gotham City? Anyway.
Quite familiar.
Yes.
I feel like they messed up on the title. It should be The Batman, The Long Halloween. The Last Halloween, and then number the 7.
Could there be like a four letter word that starts with L, Batman? Like the love Batman? I don't know. I can't think of another word. The love Batman. No, that's the same amount of letters. What do you think about this issue, Pete?
This is old school fun for me. I mean, you know, you get those kind of pinups of the Tim Sale art in the back, and, you know, I'm swimming in my nostalgia bath, having a great time. So, yeah, I just...
From the cover to the pages in the back, this is a great comic. Just to throw out there, there's a couple of pages in between. How'd you feel about those?
Those were great. I'm enjoying this. I feel like it's there's a lot of action, and it just makes me feel like I'm kind of revisiting the old one in a kind of different way. So I'm having a blast.
This series for me has mostly been an art showcase, and this issue, nothing against Dave Johnson and Dave Stewart, but it's not the showiest of the issues, which is fine. I appreciated, though, that we were also getting back to the holiday mystery and unraveling some stuff there. We're getting a Becky Cloonan issue coming up, I believe, which I'm pretty excited about. I love her art, so that should be good. We're taking everyone down with us. Number 2 from Image Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, art by Stefano Landini. Once again, we had Matthew Rosenberg on the show to talk about this book a couple of weeks back. Everybody's at Comic Book Live, folks. Everybody. And I should mention, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast and all the rest, patreon.com/comicbookclub. I keep forgetting to mention that at the beginning of the stack. Anyway, in this issue and in this book, we are following sort of a Bond-style supervillain who has been attacked by the Bond-style hero. And it has left the villain's daughter on the run with a robot with her dad's memories, and we're continuing to deal with the fallout there. I got to say, true to form for Bergy, this title spun out in ways I absolutely was not expecting, but still really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, the Bergy is great for when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I shouldn't say when it comes to stuff. Bergy is great. End of sentence. I love the kind of the girl and killer robot against all. You know, this was action packed. There's tons of twists and turns. This is just a blast to read, and the art just does such a great job of heightening everything in the right ways. Just super impressive package here.
Yeah, this is really good. Like you said, beautiful, beautiful book. Do not miss this, and it is going to be a wild ride. The Slasher's Apprentice, number 1 from Mad Cave Studios, written by Justin Richards, art by Val Halverson. You can probably figure out what's going on from the title, but it is about a podcaster, which is basically like the scum of the earth, I gotta say, who really wants to track down a slasher and become his apprentice. And that's what we get in the first issue. Pete, too spooky, scary, gory for you?
Yes. This is the like creepiest kid ever. And dude, the panel in here that killed me, and sorry for the spoilers, after the kid murders, like the corpse is on the steps and he just steps on the body. Like he's just going up the steps. Like it's a normal day. And it's one of the creepiest fucking panels. And it's so gross. And then it's like it's serial killer worship and all that bullshit, and so worst case scenario. It's the fucking worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario. I generally like this book, and I agree with you. There's some very creepy sequences in here. There's a lot going on in a lot of directions in this first issue, which is sometimes hard to follow, I think, when it jumps from scene to scene. At the same time, there's a sparseness that I appreciated, taking time and stepping back from the words, that does amp up the dread throughout. But I do want to say something without being too rude about it, and I don't know where this title came in the process, but to paraphrase a really good post that Alex DeCampi put up once that I saw, if your book is titled The Slasher's Apprentice and your last page is somebody going up to the slasher and saying, I want to be your apprentice, no fucking shit. So that's the only thing that was really frustrating to me about the book. And like maybe the title came off of that last page later, but I was like, guys, that's where you start. That is where you start the first issue, is with I Am the Slasher's Apprentice, not lead up to it. We don't need a whole issue of that.
Is it like a zero issue for that, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I understand the impulse there to do it, but I don't know, man. You just want to like... We read a lot of comic books, and you're not going to surprise people with that last page, given the literal cover of the book. So if that's where you end up, I think it's important to kind of like rethink the flow of that a little bit. Like you're saying, make it a zero issue, make it back matter, whatever it is. So good start, interesting art. I'm still going to read an issue two, but this is, without sounding too rude, I think a good lesson for comic books to take forward. Fantastic Four, number 31 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Corey Smith. Ben Grimm has lost his powers, and as we discovered a really long time ago, this is something that I had completely forgotten, but Ryan North unearths, is that if Ben Grimm loses his powers, everybody starts losing their powers. And that's exactly what's happened to the Fantastic Four. It's unclear whether that was part of Dr. Doom's plan, but whatever it is, they hatch a plan to go throughout the multiverse and steal a little bit of the old cosmic rays to get their powers back. This was a very sad issue of this book, I gotta say.
Yeah, yeah. Plus the kind of repeating image of him getting blasted in the face with cosmic rays over and over again is kind of creepy.
Yeah. No, that was... Okay, I don't know what you were necessarily reading into that. I didn't necessarily find it creepy so much as, like, sad because nothing keeps happening with him. But, yeah, there's a fair amount of dread going on here, I think, throughout this book. They end at a place where they're almost doing something villainous in a surprising way that means big bad things for the Marvel Universe. This title has been very done and won, but since the One World Under Doom event has started, things have changed in a big way, and I'm really curious to see what happens next. Detective Comics 2025 Annual Number 1 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing and Joshua Helfialkov, art by Stefano Raphael, John McCrae, Fico Osseo, and Mike Norton. In this issue, Batman gets a mystery that he is told not to solve. Specifically, written in blood is Batman, do not solve this mystery. Of course, he has to track it down. Of course, he solves it over the course of several chapters. And it gets weirder and wilder in the way that only Al Ewing can do. And then there's a really lovely backup story about Batman teaming up with a kid, a school kid who idolizes him. That was delightful.
Hits you in the feels.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about it a little bit, Pete.
Dude, that was just really touching. Yeah, this is a great collection of stories. I think a great annual for that. Yeah, the Batman helping the kid one. Oh, my God. And then the little pep talk at the end. Oh, my God, this is so good. And then in the regular story, you kind of got this time bubble thing that got a little weird for me. But I'm still having a great time with it.
Next up, Void Rivals, number 18 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Lorenzo DeFelici. As usual, a lot of things going on in this issue. Now that we have the revelation of what's actually going on in this book is out there, why these two Void Rivals should never touch and never meet, never bring about the unity, even though they both believe that they have to do that now. Pete, what'd you think about this one?
Man, this is just a blast for me. I really kind of I love what's happening here. Love all the Transformers fun, the art, the action, the story. This is a blast and a half, and I cannot wait to read what's going to happen next. I'm just eating this up here, and this just continues to be great. Just like Radiant Black, I'm having fun with Void Rivals.
I'm having a little more fun now that the story is out there and we're moving forward, particularly the relationship between the male Void Rival and his dad in this issue is a lot of fun because the dad just doesn't get humor. So that's a fun bit for Kirkman to play with. I'm curious to see where this goes and how this all ties back to the greater narrative.
Yeah.
Crush Depth, number 2 from Mad Cave Studios, written by David D.B. Andre and Tim Daniel, art by Alex Sanchez. Pete, are you feeling that Crush Depth?
First off, cool cover here. This is fun. But yeah, this is, for me, this is like horror, like Aliens meets Venom, you know, with the goo and all that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little closer to like Abyss meets Annihilation with a little bit of low, because it takes place in a submarine. Presumably after the world ended, they are traveling under the sea. They haven't seen human life in a very long time. What?
Under the sea?
I know. I mean, you can't. I can feel that horrible crab.
Fighting the current on that. And it just, oh, man, sorry.
Yeah. Well, darling, it's better. Anyway, like you said, I thought this was a great escalation from the first issue, particularly in the second half. The things that happened to some of the characters are so gross and weird. Dude. And like, I literally paused halfway through the book to be like, whoa, that escalated quickly to myself. And it really does. Very, very fun, because we've been following one of the characters crawling throughout the submarine, and we don't exactly know why, but we get a hint of it in this issue. And it grows.
Dude, it was so intense. Like, my palms were sweaty. You know what I mean? Mom spaghetti. Like, I was on the edge of my seat. It's intense.
Yeah. Did you know that Eminem was actually up for Sebastian the Crab in the original The Mermaid, but he hadn't done anything yet and they didn't know he existed, so he didn't get it. It's pretty crazy. Crazy story. NYX, number 10 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Francesco Mortarino. This is the final issue of this book as the NYX team all comes together, finally, to face down Mojo and take back New York. I know this has been Justin's favorite. Not necessarily my favorite back and forth, though I've generally enjoyed these characters. What did you think, Pete?
I thought this ended really well. I love this issue. You know, love wins in the end here. Spoilers, but yeah. The vibes and the panels were really cool. Yeah, loved the art and the kind of like shading in this book. Some really great kind of fun color choices. The villain Mojo was great. So yeah, I thought this was a blast, and sorry to see it go. I mean, I felt like I was finally kind of getting into it.
Mm-hmm. I'm total agreement with you. Like you said, the art is great in this issue. There's a bunch of pages that Francesco Mortarino draws, like their New York style graffiti, which I thought were really cool and very well laid out. And yeah, it's very much a focus on like Miss Marvel in the book. And I think this team has nailed her character nicely. Curious to see what they do in the giant sized X-Men shot one shots that are coming up next and how they will follow up on that story. Feral number 12 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner and Tone Rodriguez. In this issue, our cats are being protected by a dog. If you can believe it, yeah, cats and dogs sleeping together.
Mass hysteria.
And as you can probably see from the cover, if you are looking at the cover, if you're not, you can't see it. They figure out what might be a safe haven in a former pet store. But of course, it is surrounded by infected pets, which is going to make things pretty difficult for our pretty kitties.
Pretty difficult.
Pretty kitty.
You got to be fleecing kidding me. This is just another great issue. Just having a blast with this. Edge of your seat, kind of like Disney nightmare. It's insane how invested I am in these fucking cats, man. But yeah, this is great. The danger is really high stakes. But yeah, it was nice to see Mr. Moose, I believe. Mr. Mooser. It was cool to see the kind of dogs and cats getting along, Alex.
Yeah, this is a smart idea for an arc, and I'm excited to see how this works out. This book is at its best when it leads into Walking Dead, but with cats, and the idea that they're like, we found another safe haven, but we have to get past all these infected. I'm like, yep, there you go, right across the plate. So this should be fun and horrible. Dark Pyramid, number 2 from Mad Cave Studios, written by Paul Tobin, art by PJ Holden. We have been following a character who's looking for a boyfriend who got lost on Mount Denali. And it turns out Mount Denali isn't just a river in Egypt. And in fact, it isn't at all.
All right. Yeah, a creepy cover here. We got this kind of really disgusting kind of bad guy, nightmare kind of thing chasing them. Always be running, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're running from a monster, don't stop running. Mm-hmm. Keep fucking running because your life fucking depends on it. Drive me a little crazy in this one when they're like stopping to talk with people. And I'm like, oh, you're out of your damn minds. I was yelling at my comic today.
Mm. I like the art in this. The monster is very creepy. There's a weird, quirky tone throughout here. Like you're saying, the whole idea that they're like, we got to get to Mount Denali. Oh, let's stop in this cabin real quick and see what's going on. I'm like, what? No, what? No.
He's literally ripping people apart, being like, see the insides. I'm
she's like I got to go inside.
This is the scariest thing possible.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do to stop this monster that nobody else is doing? You have no special powers. That was I don't even mind it. Like, I know it's ridiculous, but I think that is the tone that Paul Tobin is going for with this book, nailing it. I do have one quibble, which is the opposite from The Slasher's Apprentice, which is we're 2 issues in, and the beginning was like this guy, Hookie, who is a YouTube streamer, finds a weird pyramid in the mountain and disappears. And then his girlfriend comes to find him, does not really get up the mountain. This issue, the other person that she's with is like, let me tell you all about this pyramid that's inside the mountain. And I'm like, okay, here we go. Let's get to the dark pyramid.
Yeah.
They only get like in the woods by the end of this issue. And it's kind of like, when are you going to get to the dark pyramid? The title of this book is Dark Pyramid. We are 2 issues in and you are not in the dark pyramid yet. This is the opposite of the Slasher's Apprentice, which just got, like, took too long to get to the Slasher's Apprentice, but hit it at the end of the first issue. And it's like, surprise. And it's like, it's not a surprise. I'm mostly surprised we are not at the Dark Pyramid yet. Anyway, maybe we're all in the Dark Pyramid. Maybe this is my Dark Pyramid.
Yeah, I think it is. Anyway. Oh, man.
Looking forward to being frustrated by the next one, too, I guess.
Red Hulk. You never know. You never know. It could be all Dark Pyramid.
That's why you got to keep reading all comics. You never know what a Dark Pyramid's going to be in them. Red Hulk, number 3 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Jeff Shaw. Red Hulk and Machine Man and Deathlok have broken out of Doom's prison, but now they need to fight down an army of Doom bots. And oh my gosh, I am so worried about Thunderbolt Ross getting frostbite. What is he doing? He is just running through the snow in his tiny little ripped pants. He is going to get so cold.
He is going to get so cold, but then he'll turn into the Hulk and he'll be fine. Yeah, I was surprised how invested I was in this. I think this is such a great idea. Red Hulk versus Doom. Awesome. Great idea. And this, Ross specifically, this is just so cool. I felt like this is such a great setup. I cannot wait for the next issue. Love the art. Love the action. Really doing a great job with this book.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this as well. This is one of the stronger One World Under Dune tie-ins, I think. Like you said, I was not looking forward to it. I don't love the idea of the Red Hulk, but Benjamin Percy is just making the situation so over the top that it is fun to read. Red Sonja versus the Army of Darkness, number 1 from Dynamite, written by Tim Seeley, art by Jim Tierney. Exactly what the title says, what it says on the tin. We get Ash Williams set up. He's bummed out after the end of Army of Darkness. What does he do? Opens up the Necronomicon and whoops, he's back in Red Sonja times. Whoopsie doodle. You love Tim Seeley. Pete, how'd you feel about this one?
I do love he does great work. And when you think about, like, oh man, here's a great kind of writer that also really does great with comedy. Awesome. Army of Darkness is perfect for that. Ash, I can just see him killing an Ash voice really well. So I was very excited about this, and I think they do a great job in this kind of first issue of setting this all up. How do we get there? How does this happen? And this is really a lot of fun. Great setup. I cannot wait for the next ish. I feel like with the art and the writing, this is going to be a blast and a fun ride.
The Seasons, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Paul Azaceta. In this issue, the carnival is finally here, and Summer Seasons is their guest of honor.
Oh, boy.
Things get weird. Things get really weird, man. Yeah. By the end of this issue. Pete, you've been dreading this carnival. How did you feel?
Yeah, I'm so scared. And what sucks is, you know, we've been hoping that the girl is going to be able to save Summer, but she gets there and doesn't. She only has like a second or two and doesn't quite kind of get her point across. And Summer goes into the evil circus. And, it's really not going to end well, I feel like. But, man, this is just so beautifully drawn. The mischievous eyes and, like, the details in the artwork is just really impressive. It's, like, beautiful but creepy and does such a cool job of, like, walking that line. The colors in this are just amazing. This is such a great book for a lot of reasons, but it's definitely worth it for the art alone.
I agree with you on the art. I think Paul Azaceta is drawing the heck out of this. The carnival sequences are very creepy and, like you said, bright creepy. It's sort of like Midsommar in terms of...
It's an interesting, because we're so used to dark, you know, scary things, but this is the opposite. But it still has that kind of, like, scariness to it, you know?
Yes. In terms of the story, I'm not quite sure what is happening here yet, but I do think Remender is going for a little
bit
of
slow playing us.
Well, I think he's going for the dream logic of a Little Nemo in Slumberland is what's happening. Okay. That's a bit of what I'm getting here, even though Azaceta isn't necessarily going for that art style. I would love to have a better sense of what's happening, and I assume that is coming.
Oh, it is.
Kill Train, number 4 from Mad Cave Studios, written by Olivia Quartero Briggs, art by Martina Niosi. This is about a future version of New York City where the population is out of control. So just every once in a while, they murder everybody on a subway train.
And so it's a train on New York City. You know what I mean?
There is a woman who's trapped in one of these kill trains, and while she is completely dissociating from reality, she is fighting her way to the front of the train, things getting worse and worse, and in this issue, she faces down a version of herself.
Oh, the classic.
Mm-hmm. I love this series. This is bloody and disgusting and funny. One of the things that I predicted last issue definitely comes to pass, and I think as happy as I was that I was like, hey, I guessed it. I think the way they hit the event that happens here is really nicely emotionally done, very sad and poignant. I'm really curious to see where things are going to end up in the final issue, given the setup of this last page. But really good, very strong series here.
Yeah, this continues to be a blast. This is just such a simple kind of premise, but so well kind of set up and done. Artistically, it's awesome. And this poor lady is just fighting for her life. And we get a kind of an interesting reveal at the end that I was like, oh, shit. So, yeah, I can't wait to see what the next subway car is going to be. But, man, yeah, this is awesome.
I should have mentioned we were in the middle of our kill block here because we're turning it over to Something is Killing the Children, number 41, for Boob Studios, written by James Tynion
IV. Kill block.
Kill block. Art by Werther Delladera. In this issue, we are back in time once again to a little... Why can't
Erica.
I remember? Erica. Oh, my God. Erica Slaughter. Wow. Yeah. I was like, Heather? That's not right. anyway, little Erica is going on an adventure with her mentor, and we know already things are going to go very, very bad. Pete, what'd you think?
This is just, first off, great cover. Get a little bit more backstory on Erica. Yes, please. Thank you. This is awesome. Artistically, it's awesome. It's creepy, but it's great. And you're rooting for Erica. You're rooting for them to save the kids and kill all these monsters. But this is just continues to be impressive, the world building and all the stuff that we get. And it's insane to me that this is issue 41 and we're still learning things about Erica. Great. This is great.
I agree, but I would like to get back to the present timeline. That's my only thing. We have been in the past with Erica for issues.
We haven't learned anything about Erica. It's just been like, we've
learned so much about her. We've learned about her. We've learned about the different houses. We've learned about mythology. I'm going to get back to where we last left her and move forward because I like this. I enjoy this. But having back-to-back-to-back flashback stuff makes me feel like, when are we going to move forward? When are we going to move on to the next thing?
Because you love it and you want more, and that they got you right where they want you.
I am also tired of being in Erica Slaughter's nostalgia bath, Pete.
That's no way. I love it. But the kid hug was so touching. Oh, he's got it.
It's really good. This title is always good, but moving forward. You'll Do Bad Things, number 2 You'll from Image Comics, written by Tyler Boss, art by Adriano Tertolucci. This is about a writer who is writing true crime. He wants to get away from it, but unfortunately he's finding that some true crime may find him anyway. Ooh. Pete, I assume this creeped you out.
Yeah. But the art and the colors are amazing on this book. I mean, the mood set by the shading alone is just so amazing. Worth it for the shading alone. Yeah. This is an intense thriller, horror, fun twists, creepy as fuck though, but really good.
I really like this as well, and I do really like the art style. I thought this issue jumped around a little bit more than the previous one. Not to sound repetitive with my reviews here, but this one was a little harder to follow than the first issue I found, just in terms of the plot. So I found myself hooking into the main character a lot more. I'm interested to find out about him and his journey. There's a scene set at a bookstore where he's getting frustrated and just wants to talk about how he's going to be writing romance that I thought was well done. I'll still follow this because I think the art is, like I said, really good. But I hope we focus up a little bit more next issue. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and
sure
YouTube.
Do.
Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time.
Ah! Ah, what the?
Ah, that was Faker. That was Faker, Pete. I really thought I would get you to jump again.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribes your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.